It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
8:45 or so, the Secret Service told the White House press corps to evacuate. Now, usually what that means, Sean, is if you're out there on the North Lawn, you don't want to be downwind of any dispersal techniques. In other words, if they're going to use pepper or some other agent, they want to clear an area, especially when there are lots of people, they don't want you on the North Lawn. Or it could also mean, and sometimes it does, that protesters have gotten too close to the fence line. I don't believe that was the case. But as you've known, Sean, the mob is, in fact, on the move. In fact, they're trying to do to D.C. what they've done in Seattle, and that's create an autonomous zone. They're calling this one, wait for it, Black House Autonomous Zone. They tried to actually set up shop just north of the White House, about a block east of Lafayette Park, using barricades that were already there, Sean, thanks to D.C.'s Mayor Muriel Bowser, who cordoned off a part of 16th Street, renamed it Black Lives Matter Plaza. So they sort of scooted those barricades over along with some fencing. However, the separatists have been hit by a massive law enforcement presence. So at this hour, it's still unclear how much autonomy they may be able to secure. Sources on the ground, in fact, are telling us that there are dozens and dozens and again dozens of men and women in uniform in that area. We've got a crew on the scene, as you see there, and as we get pictures, we'll pass them along. Meanwhile, Sean, I want to tell you this very quickly. Authorities have also moved in to save the statue of Old Hickory, Andrew Jackson. Anarchists and other protesters defaced the statue of the 7th President of the United States, and they tried to pull it down. That, too, was right there in Lafayette Park, directly across from the White House. Thankfully, law enforcement moved in to push back the mob and to protect that historic statue. I'm going to make my way over there and see what else I can learn on the ground. If I get more before your hour's up, I promise to pass it along, Sean. But for now, back to you.
All right, Sandy Rios with you. That was last night, Kevin Corrick on Fox, and there have been more reports this morning, but I will tell you what I know because I've seen lots of videos from the scene. It really was quite a mob yesterday, and they ended up defacing St. John's Church again. They painted on those big columns BHAZ, which stands for, of course, as Kevin just said, Black House Autonomous Zone. You know, I did find myself wondering, when will they burn down the White House? You probably have no clue that it refers to the paint, but don't think they won't try to do that. There is nothing that's off limits right now. And so they started a fire in the street in front of St. John's, and then they had disputes over it, so other people tried to put it out. They were a very violent crowd. They were, you'll be happy to know it was multiracial. You know, there is no, they work together, these wicked people who want to destroy. They at least are not, you know, racist. So be happy about that. And so they were pressing Lafayette Square. Of course, they surrounded it. Lafayette Square, I used to, my office when I was president of CWA overlooked Lafayette Square. It's a beautiful statue of him on a horse. It's beautifully crafted. It's a gorgeous work of art. So they tie ropes about it. They ropes around it. They deface it with graffiti, and then they began to try to take it down. And you could see, I mean, it's not hard to see who's doing this. By the way, the guy was white. I just thought I'd point that out because it's important, you know, in these discussions of racism. I'd like to see his face close up. I think you could find it. And he may be in trouble because the president has already issued a warning that there are already statutes on the book that you will get 10 years in prison under the Veterans Memorial Preservation Act, if you breach this. And David Bernhardt, who's the Secretary of the Interior Department, said that we will not bow to anarchists. Law and order will prevail and justice will be served. So there may be some, this is not the only statue. They pulled down a Confederate general statue just a couple of days ago. And we're going to talk about the pulling down of statues in a minute. But they weren't able to get Andrew Jackson down. in Lafayette Park last night. But I'm telling you, the things that I saw were just so disturbing. You know, they're all geared out because they have tons of money from like Walmart, the tons of money from, you know, corporate America and Hollywood. And they have so much money that Black Lives Matter has been giving their money away and funding other wonderful causes because they can't quite keep up with the donations because everyone has to prove that they're not a racist. So they like to fund this Marxist international movement that wants to destroy the country. They've got to, yay, get on board for Black Lives Matter, which has nothing to do with the precious lives of your black brothers and sisters and cousins and neighbors and friends. Nothing to do with that. Really isn't about the preciousness of life. Otherwise, why would like three black men have been shot in Seattle, in the that special zone in Seattle, the last less than a week, over the weekend? Three people shot. They were all black. So I don't think black lives really do matter in this crew. But, you know, if they're killed by white people and it can further the cause of Marxism and the destruction of this country, then they're all about that. So please don't be fooled. Do not be fooled. And we're going to talk about that movement a little bit more in detail. But back to last night. So what I saw with my own eyes was the protesters getting away with murder, basically. Well, just a murder of a statue. And they were just about to topple it when here did come the police. Thank God. And it is the strongest show of police and restraint, force against the protesters I've seen. And I was grateful for it. The police were not having it. And they formed a line with the shields and they marched toward the protesters and cleared them out back to the fence just in front of St. John's. I don't really know this morning if the Black House Autonomous Zone is sitting. I don't know. Mayor Muriel Bowser, I'm sure, is right on it all. I mean, she was kind of absent last night. She's the one that called that Black Lives Matter Plaza. So, you know, and I saw this huge banner on one of there aren't many high rises in D.C., but one of the taller buildings by St. John's had this huge Black Lives Matter beautifully crafted. It was very well done. It must cost a few dollars to declare, you know, that zone theirs. And what the protesters did, they took those barricades that Muriel Bowser had used to erect her Black Lives Matter zone, whatever she called it, plaza, and they used that to establish their own zone. Because, you know, when it's been pointed out, one of the first things that these protesters do is establish a border. Because somehow they get it, that borders are what make countries or zones. That's what Seattle did too. They declared themselves their own country. They seceded, and they did that by taking barriers and establishing a wall. But what a quaint thought that a wall might be important in the perverse way. Yeah, they understand that. So that's what happened last night in D.C. I'm sure we'll be hearing more about that. I think that's I know another thing that happened. Other protesters came then after that first, what looked to me to be the first wave of police strength. And the protesters then showed up with shields themselves. I saw a little bit of it. They were, they weren't handmade, maybe sort of not mass manufactured, but they looked alike and they had several layers of wood, and otherwise I can't describe them. But they came in and then they started screaming, "This is what community policing looks like. We don't need," and then they just hurled a series of vulgarities at the police, shouting that we don't need you. Yeah, so I guess they don't, but maybe some of us might need the police to protect us from this anarchist bunch. But we'll come back to that that whole discussion in just a second. So yesterday we found out that the rally in Tulsa, you know, they've been telling us repeatedly what a flop it was, and there were hardly, you know, there was only according to the fire department, there were only 6,200 scanned tickets. We're learning more and more about this, but let me just say before we decide that we're going to listen to pretty much anyone on this, that we know now that Fox had the largest Saturday night audience in its history ever. And just to kind of put this in comparison, ESPN's coverage of the NFL draft opening averaged 8 million listeners. MSNBC's most watched Democratic primary debate averaged 7.7 million. And CNN's most watched weekday Democratic primary debate averaged 7.4 million. On Saturday night, when President Trump was speaking in Tulsa, they clocked 7.7 million total viewers. So that's the highest they've ever had on a Saturday night in their history. So, you know, it was such a flop. Nobody wanted to see the president, right? That's what they want to tell us. And that's what they've been telling us over and over again. And by the way, I have another account from the rally from someone. And let me see if I can make this as concise as I can, because he's pretty upset. He said the Box Center holds at least 19,000. The area outside the convention set up by the Secret Service and Tulsa PD had a U-shaped squeeze chute to funnel the crowd down to an area about 50 feet wide and 600 feet long with an outdoor stage adjacent to the Bach entrance. And Trump was supposed to speak to that overflow group. Entry to the secure area, not to the Bach Center, was about five blocks away, where you had to pass screeners who took your temperature, made you put on a mask, and gave you a green band to precede the Secret Service security. If the temperature screeners left, you were not allowed in, and that's exactly what happened. The Box Center, just before the doors opened, had blocked off every other seat in the arena, so the arena could only hold about 9,500 people. After it went back and forth with the Trump campaign, something happened to allow more people in groups of just 100 at a time. We had to wait 30 minutes each time for them to let just 100 of us trickle into the building. I'm not talking about security. We'd already passed through security. You could actually run into the building each time they would just let 100 of us in. And that was just wrong and corrupt. That was the stadium's corrupt management. They removed the stickers rule on every other seat, but only after they shut down all entry to the event location. I looked over to the screening area. I told my wife something was fishy. And he said that the screeners that were taking temperatures just left. They left their posts, and from what I'm learning, thousands could not get in the first checkpoint. Now, that's five blocks away, because the temperature screeners had to put a green wristband on you to gain access to the Secret Service security checkpoint. I think the Bach management told the screeners that they've reached capacity for what they wanted to let in, and they wouldn't let other people in. And that's his speculation, but it would make sense, wouldn't it? And then he said, the setup was to make the crowds look like the crowds did not show up, but the crowds did show up after 2 hours before the event, but no one was letting them get through security. And he says 3/4 of the building was full and no overflow crowd, and CNN boasted that the rally was a flop. He said this is pure political corruption. So he thinks it's the Bach management, the building management, along with, I would say, I don't know what else. We talked about Fox's ranting all day long on Saturday about the coronavirus spiking in Oklahoma, of all places, just on that day. World Health Organization, issued this warning. Oh, it's terrible. You can't go out. And Fox repeated that every 5 minutes. I heard it myself. So the people that listen to Fox, many of them are Trump supporters. And if you don't think that had an effect also, you would probably be wrong about that. So that's what happened. That's at least what we know that we can trust on what happened in Tulsa. I want to remind many of you that today is a primary. There's a primary in Kentucky, in the state of New York, and in Virginia. And there, especially, I don't know the breakdown of all these. As I said before, I wish I could keep up with every state in more detail. But you need to look, okay? If you're in Kentucky or if you're in Virginia, you need to check where your primary is. And, I hope that you've checked before today. But if you haven't, this is the time to do that. And in speaking of elections, the Biden campaign has now agreed to 3 debates with President Trump. The Trump team wants more than that, but the Biden campaign says only 3. They will be September 29th, October 15th, and October 22nd. The vice presidential candidates will have 1 debate, October the 7th. So that will be interesting, won't it? That will be interesting. You're trying to tell us that, Joe Biden is, way far ahead in the polls. It's a done deal. In fact, the Democrats I was reading yesterday are already privately talking about they're expecting a landslide for Joe Biden. I don't know. I don't know, really. I mean, it is true that our neighbors and friends are being so deceived by reporting and news media that it's possible. But I don't think it's likely. And I want to tell you, do not fall prey to what is the mass delusion. Go with your own gut. You can see things and they will create impressions and they will try to mold your mind by polls, by news reports. And so just stick to your guns on what you think should happen for this country. We're going to have to go it alone when it comes to information. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Every day, babies in their mother's wombs are fighting for life. with abortion being the leading cause of death.
I already had my mind made up. I was like, I'm going to go through with it.
The Ministry of Preborn has pregnancy centers nationwide, standing by to help young moms in crisis choose life. Preborn is the largest provider of free ultrasounds in the country. By letting a mother see her baby in the womb and hear the heartbeat, she's 80% more likely to choose life for her baby.
I came seeking termination, but once I got here and I took an ultrasound, I was overjoyed when I found out that I was having three baby boys.
Preborn's mission is to help save babies' lives and souls. To find out more, go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com. Or dial #250 and say the keyword baby. That's #250 and say baby. Your love can save a life.
This is good news, maybe exactly when you need it to. Right now, MediShare is waiving their new member fees. This could save you money on top of all that you'll save each month by becoming a member of MediShare. So many people are looking for a healthcare solution right now, seeing the cost of COBRA plans, for instance, and MediShare is the affordable alternative to health insurance. The typical family saves $500 a month. You might save even more. MediShare is a Christian community that shares each other's healthcare costs, and because of the current economic situation, they're making it easier than ever. Apply by May 30th, and you can save an additional $170 on your first month. I'll give you the number here in a second, and if you call, you can get a price within 2 minutes. Just tell them the promo code SHARE to receive your additional savings. Maybe now is the time to make the switch, like more than 400,000 people already have, and start saving. Here it is. Call 833-44-BIBLE. That's 833-44-BIBLE. 833-44-BIBLE.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
I've got to tell you guys about MyPillow. I sleep like a baby, and MyPillow has an incredible offer. Buy one, get one free pricing on MyPillows, the rolls, go anywhere pillows. Just go to the radio listener's special page at MyPillow.com. Use the promo code Starnes or call 1-800-839-8506. And if you order Mike's book, your entire MyPillow order will ship free. Plus, you get a $25 gift card for your next purchase. Call 1-800-839-8506 or go to the radio listener's special page at MyPillow.com, promo code Starnes.
Motorists around the nation are beyond frustrated by protesters blocking roadways, surrounding cars, and terrorizing drivers. WSB Television in Atlanta reports two white motorists were stopped by armed black men, told they could not use the roadway because of the color of their skin. And in Columbus, Ohio, a 911 operator told a driver help would not be coming. The caller said he was surrounded by protesters banging on his car. The 911 dispatcher told the man help would not be coming because the mayor told the police to stand down. Can you imagine being in that situation, surrounded by a rampaging mob alone? No way to protect yourself, no way to protect your family? State lawmakers in Ohio are pushing back, saying police need to be unleashed so they can do their job. Otherwise, even more cities will spiral into anarchy. Be sure to download my new podcast, available right now at toddstarnes.com.
Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
For the second time in 2 days, shots rang out in Seattle's Capitol Hill-occupied protest zone. Sunday, a 17-year-old was injured. Just a day earlier, the cop-free chop turned deadly.
Please move out of the way so we can get to the victim.
Body cam video shows Seattle police trying to get to the victims, but getting blocked by an angry crowd. Officers were even pursued as they retreated to their vehicles. They never did reach the crime scene that left a 19-year-old black teenager dead and a 33-year-old black man in critical condition. Many residents and business people are fed up with the lawlessness.
It's hell. I've never seen anything like this. I've had to take a week off. My employer's paying for it. There's nothing I can do. I'm armed all night. I can't sleep. This is insane.
It was also a violent weekend in Minneapolis, where 11 people were shot and one killed near the epicenter of the George Floyd protests. In New York City, where leaders are proposing a $1 billion cut to the police department, there were 22 shootings. And the deadliest of all, Chicago, where 104 people were shot over 2 days, including a 3-year-old boy who was among the 14 people killed.
Where's the outrage? Where's the outrage for this 3-year-old that was killed? The same type of outrage when George Floyd was killed by the police in Minneapolis.
Sick calls by officers in the Atlanta Police Department still plagues the city as violent crime continues there. Back in Seattle, where police are still not back in their East Precinct, Mayor Jenny Durkin says there will be changes. It is the city's responsibility, she says, to maintain the safety in these circumstances in all parts of Seattle, including the more dangerous conditions on Capitol Hill in the evenings. People who claim to be leaders of CHOP say the shootings were gang-related. Police don't have any suspects, but their investigation has been hampered by the fact that they couldn't process the crime scene. After the shootings, dozens and dozens of people called 911, some of the very same people who claim that we shouldn't have any police at all.
So I guess maybe it's not such a street fair as the mayor, Jenny Durkin, had declared. Oh, this is fun. We just have to, it's like a, you know, think of it as summer festival. It could last through August. Now, she's had three shootings, and it's not turning out very well for Seattle and certainly for the people who live in Seattle. This is a nightmare. So now the mayor is saying that she's going to take that back. But, you know, she's not announcing a timeline. We're going to do it gradually, she says. And if that she's expecting them all, you know, to leave peacefully, really talk about delusion. I talk about delusion because I want to tell you who she's dealing with. Maybe she doesn't realize it. Maybe she, it just makes you wonder. It just seems like, this is my impression. I do not know. But it seems like there's so much pot smoking going on now in D.C., in Washington, in Colorado, and pretty much everywhere now that people are just getting stupid. I'm sorry. They're just getting stupid because that's what pot does to people. I saw it with my own eyes, with my own generation. That's why I hate it so much. So we've got a mayor. Oh, you know, well, we're going to have a street fair while all this debauchery, really, and murder and extortion and criminality and stealing and destruction is taking place. It's a street festival from her perspective. Nothing to get too cranked up about, except now she's cranked up because there have been three shootings, but not terribly cranked up because she's not going out there to remove anything or to move them out. Just we intend to. We at some point will. We promise. Soon. Yeah. So that's what's happening in Seattle. Meanwhile, Black Lives Matter, I have to talk about it again. I have told you it's an international movement. I've told you that it was formed by three black women who are, I don't know if they are transgender, certainly bisexual, a lesbian. It seems as though they certainly, their loyalties are there. You can tell it in their a statement, but that's just too small. They're the front people for this, but it's really so much bigger than this. In fact, one of them is, Black Lives Matter actually was founded in 2013 in response to the acquittal of George Zimmerman in the shooting death of Trayvon Martin in Florida. So that was 2013. It now is a global network. It has more than 40 chapters. It's springing up everywhere. They're bringing down statues in London, and I'm not sure where else, but it's a big thing. And, you know, I told you it's got millions and millions of dollars now. So it was created by Alicia Garza, Opal Tometi, and Patrice Cullors. And their mission, they say, is to build local power to intervene in violence inflicted on black communities by the state and vigilantes. Well, that sounds pretty, well, that you could almost say, well, is if there is really police brutality or the outsized or disproportionate killing of black men, you could get mad and say that that's justified. But we find out when we move down in it that really they're looking to advance the cause of black transgender women, destroying the natural family. It's a whole panoply of wonderful things. But interestingly enough, Patrice Cullors, who is the founder of the Black Lives Matter Global Network, admitted back in a 2015 interview that they are actually Marxist. And I thought it would be a good thing for you to actually hear Patrice say this out of her own mouth. Let's listen. This is clip 9.
I think that the criticism is helpful. I also think that it might... I think of a lot of things. The first thing I think is that we actually do have an ideological frame. Myself and Alicia in particular are trained organizers. We are trained Marxists. We are super versed on sort of ideological theories.
Patrice Culler is one of the three black women founders of Black Lives Matter. We are trained Marxists. They rarely admit that. That's why I wanted you to hear it. The people marching right now are declaring Bernie Sanders, whoever they are, they don't usually say, I'm a Marxist, but they are Marxists. And at least Patrice is honest because she tells us in that interview, we are Marxists. And of course, Marxists were the drive behind the Black Panther Party of the 60s and 70s, whether underground. I wish I had more time to tell you about that. It's just horrendous. I tracked that faithfully for years. Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn, children of privilege. One of them was Bill Ayers. His dad was the CEO of Commonwealth Edison, which is the big electricity company in the Midwest. Very, very wealthy people. And Bill went off the rails. He's still off the rails and, you know, spawned Barack Obama. He was a mentor to him. We think he penned his books. But that's another story. So this is the same but different. Now it's Black Lives Matter. But then also we hear her in an updated interview where she talks about, that's where she talks about what their actual goal is. And I thought you should hear it again out of her own lips. This is clip 10.
I heard a lot of criticism of former Vice President Joe Biden from civil rights activists. The election obviously will be a choice. How do you think Biden matches up compared to President Trump when it comes to these issues that are important to you?
Well, hands down, Trump not only needs to not be in office in November, but he should resign now. Trump needs to be out of office. He is not fit for office. And so what we are going to push for is a move to get Trump out, while we're also going to continue to push and pressure Vice President Joe Biden around his policies and relationship to policing and criminalization. That's going to be important. But our goal is to get Trump out.
Our goal is to get Trump out. In case you'd forgotten or didn't realize it, it really isn't to bring justice to the black community. It's to get Trump out. But any black American that's paying attention knows that President Trump has done so many things for the black community intentionally. Remember he said when he was campaigning, he said, you should vote. What have you got to lose? You've had all of these Democrats, serving allegedly your communities for decades, and look where it's gotten you. I will do stuff. I will help you. What have you got to lose? That's basically what he said. And I know that there are thousands and thousands of black Americans who have come alongside the president, and we have seen him do these opportunity zones in major cities where they build up commerce and encourage black business. And also the prison reform bill, which I wasn't in favor of. I tell you, I'm concerned about it because it's allowed a lot of prisoners of all colors. I'm sorry, I'm laughing because it's just like this. We have to say this, you know, colors. But it's all colors. They're letting out prisoners who shouldn't be out on the streets, and there has been an increase of crime. But it means a lot to the black community. I sort of get that. I do, because if right or wrong, there's this strong perception that they have been mistreated and they can't trust the police. And this has been a way that President Trump has released several people, high profile, lots of them, thousands actually, back into real life. And it has meant a lot to black communities. You hear lots of them praising him for that. And also, of course, the black unemployment rate was reduced to the levels it's never been at ever in our history as a country. The highest employment ever for black Americans. But that was before the pandemic, and that was before this mess on the streets. But that's the truth of it. And Black Lives Matter, I don't think they have a plan other than destruction and murder. And, you know, they have a slogan. They got a slogan. So that's, you know, Black Lives Matter. They don't mean it, but they have a slogan. I want to tell you about one of their other activists and founders, Sean King. I don't know if if his name means anything to you, but I would like for you to remember it is Sean King. Sean, let's see. Let me go back with Sean a little bit. He got involved with the Black Lives Matter in Ferguson, and he got really involved in that. And some are saying, including those inside his world, that he's made a ton of money, and they haven't seen much of that money being spent for the cause. But also, this is his latest dictate. All murals and stained glass windows of white Jesus and his European mother and their white friends should also come down. They are a gross form of white supremacy, created as tools of oppression, racist propaganda. They should all come down. So, interestingly enough, Sean has been out on the front lines, you know, declaring that Black Lives Matter, doing what he can to actually hurt things, hurt people and things, and because he's trying to seek justice as a black man, right? So it was interesting that Don King, in an interview, and I'm not sure how recent this was. This is 2015. Don Lemon on CNN did a whole segment on who Sean King was, and I want you to hear his setup because here it is. Clip 12.
Okay, welcome back, everyone. Here's the breaking news tonight. Sean King, he is a leading voice for the Black Lives Matter movement, facing some very tough questions today and tonight about his own race. A family member tells CNN that both King's parents are white. But when I asked him tonight if he is legally black or white, initially he did not answer, but later he referred to himself as biracial. But then when I asked him if that's what it shows on his birth certificate, I did not hear back from him. No answer on that. Joining me now is legal commentator Reva Martin, psychotherapist Robbie Ludwig, and author of Till Death Do Us Part. And Mel Robbins is back with us as well. So, Reva, let's talk about this. Breitbart is reporting tonight that Sean King, activist for the Black Lives Matter movement, is not black, but he's actually white. They apparently have gotten a hold, they say, of a birth certificate that shows he's white. We've spoken to a family member. The family member says both his parents are white. Is this Rachel Dolezal 2.0? What do you think of this?
All right. I didn't get the answers there. I just wanted you to hear his question. He's talking about Rachel Dolezal. She's the white woman who was famous for posing as a black woman. She got, you know, special treatment. She got jobs. She, you know, frizzed her hair up and darkened her skin. Rachel Dolezal, don't know where she is now, but that didn't go over very well in the black community. And Sean King, by the way, duped Oprah Winfrey and got some sort of a big scholarship or grant from Oprah Winfrey as a black male. Now it looks like he's white, and he's one of the leaders of Black Lives Matter. So that might be a problem. I'm just saying it's deceit, lies, murder, destruction, extortion. What else? I mean, it is just sin. It is just sin. This is chaos coming from a group of people that are, they're just all over the map and they're criminal and they have hearts that are darkened and wicked and it has nothing to do with color. So Sean King, the white black man, now one of their leaders, I just thought I would share that with you. I want to... Let me go to this next piece because I have so much to share with you. This is interesting because the Federalist did an article. We talked about media and whether you can trust them or not. This is an article from the Federalist about NPR. You may recall that there was a woman in Louisville, Kentucky this week who you can see in a video, her car is, they're surrounding her car. Some are climbing up on her car. And then you see a bit of it where she accelerates and hits one of the protesters. And it's been reported. Let me just tell you what NPR said. They said, let's see, where is that report? They said right-wing extremists are turning cars into weapons with reports of 50 vehicle ramming incidents since protests erupted nationwide in late May. That's NPR.org. So they go on to report that this is common. 50 of them we have recorded, right-wing extremists running into protesters. And they also indicate that mainstream Republican and conservative spaces are fine with this. But the problem is the article could only cite one incident where the driver was connected to an extremist group. And in 32 of the 50 cases they point to, there are no charges whatsoever. Turns out this lady in Louisville, Kentucky was black. The protesters tried to rip out her hair, and then they came at her with a gun. And that's when she hit the gas pedal and took off and hit one of the protesters. Total and complete lies. Total and complete lies. And that's where we are. Also, interestingly enough, that woman suspected of burning the Atlanta Wendy's looks as though she was Rayshard Brooks' girlfriend. She's a white girl around 29. Remember, he's always pictured holding a baby, and we're told about what a great family man he is. We know now that that's not true. He's a violent criminal. I guess he was out with his girlfriend instead of going home to his family, which is what we were led to believe. And so his girlfriend now, we believe, is the one that led the burning down of that Wendy's in Atlanta. So much to say. Stay tuned. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Ryan DeFrady's secret agent is back.
What is it, boss? Ninjas? An army of robotic sharks?
Ryan and his mom, or partner, overcome obstacles.
Hang in there, honey!
And outlaws.
I'm ready.
In some very unlikely settings. Kids from 6 to 12 will love these animated adventures. And they'll hardly know they're learning about forgiveness, telling the truth, and respecting authority.
You can do it, Mom!
Available now at afastore.net.
On the next Today's Issues.
We appreciate hearing from you. You can send us an email at comments@afr.net.
I pastor a small church, so I have to have a full-time job on the side. When I try to feed the flock, y'all feed me, and I thank God for y'all.
If you want to watch the show live, you can go to Facebook or YouTube. Just type in Today's Issues. And you can also access the stories that we talk about.
Don't miss the next Today's Issues. Weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
For you formed my inward parts. You knitted me together in my mother's womb. My name is Abraham Hamilton III, and this is the Hamilton Minute. According to a recent study published by the Christian Post, 76.3% of all abortions are obtained by, quote, God-fearing women, unquote, with 68.7% who identified themselves as Christian women and 18% of all abortions obtained by self-described born-again or evangelical women. A corresponding CareNet study found that many women with unplanned pregnancies go silently from the church pew to the abortion clinic, convinced the church would gossip rather than help. America's greatest need is repentance. When the hearts of the American people turn to God, everything else will be impacted.
Listen each weekday from 5 to 6 p.m. Central for the Hamilton Corner with Abraham Hamilton III, public policy analyst for the American Family Association.
If you do wrong, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain, for he is the servant of God, an avenger who carries out God's wrath on the wrongdoer. Brian Fisher here with the Life and Liberty Minute. Police are God's idea, not man's. God has delegated his authority to them to restrain evil. So what happens when man dismisses the wisdom of God and tries to abolish or restrict the police? In Seattle's autonomous zone, there are reports of numerous shootings in the last few days, and rioters kept emergency personnel from even getting to a gunshot victim. He died. In Minneapolis, where the city council has voted to abolish the police, one shooting left 11 people wounded and one person dead. In New York, 22 people were shot after the mayor reduced police presence in the city. Man's way leads to violence and death, God's way to peace and stability.
Catch Brian Fisher on Focal Point, weekday afternoons at 105 Central on American Family Radio.
This is Frank Gaffney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Tucker Carlson regularly and rightly bemoans the failure of political leaders of both parties to rise to the challenges of our times. Few topics exemplify better the recklessness of Democrats and the acquiescence, if not actual complicity, of many Republicans than immigration. Yesterday, President Trump acted decisively to restrict the further mass importing of labor, as 30 million Americans are out of work. He's being criticized for doing so by members of both parties. And yet, his temporary blocking of visas for skilled and unskilled workers not only makes common sense, it enjoys broad bipartisan support among the American people. So does the need to secure our southern border. Mr. Trump travels to Arizona today to mark the 200th mile of new construction of his promised wall. Congratulations, Mr. President. Now, let's get the rest of it done. This is Frank Gaffney.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the Morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the Morning on American Family Radio.
We're in the world of history.
They want to take Jackson statue out of New Orleans without battle in New Orleans. We're not the same country.
I don't like it at all. I don't like it at all. I don't like anything that's going on. Now, federal, I've stopped. I've stopped federal. But the states are... A lot of states are weak. A lot of people are weak. And they're allowing it to happen. Hey, it's going over a little bit around the world now. They want to remove the statue of Gandhi, okay? All he wanted was peace. They want to take down Ulysses S. Grant. Well, he's the one that stopped the Confederates, right? So, you know, he was a great general. Nobody's stock went higher than his stock over the last 10 or 15 years. But, so You have to understand history, and you have to understand the culture and so many other aspects of our country. And people can study that, and they can hate it, and let's all hate it. But you can't take down George Washington's statue, and half of our country is named after Washington. You can't. We have to remember the heritage, the culture of our country. And, you know, this is less important, but it's very important. Some of the things that they're trying to destroy are magnificent pieces of art. Have you ever seen an area where a statue was removed and you look at the area and they put blacktop over the top of it? They put asphalt over the top and that's the end? And it was the center of a town or, a village, and now the statue's gone? And the whole village is like a different place. And here's the other problem I have. A lot of these people that want it down don't even know what they're taking down. I watch them on television, and I see what's happening, and they're ripping down things. They have no idea what they're ripping down. But they started off with the Confederate, and then they go to Ulysses S. Grant. Well, what's that all about? And they would knock down Lincoln. There's a group that wants to take down Lincoln. They haven't figured out exactly why yet. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson. I've stopped them twice now from going over to the Jefferson Memorial. If I weren't president, they would have knocked down. If a guy like Biden was president, they will knock down the Jefferson Memorial. Not going to happen.
That's the president with an interview with Brian Kilmeade just last night. And he did that interview just before the anarchists tried to take down the statue of Andrew Jackson in Lafayette Park and set up what they call the Black House Autonomous Zone, trying to take over Washington before the police came and very powerfully pushed them back. Now, I don't know if that autonomous zone is still there. I don't know because Mayor Muriel Bowser has declared the area around the White House, Black Lives Matter area is a word for it. But who knows? I don't know what's happened this morning because I'm busy talking to you. But I want to talk about this whole business of statues because I think it is confusing when you look at some of the statues that are representing the Confederacy, whether it's the flag or whatever it is, because we don't want to go back to slavery and we don't want to embrace the notion that it was okay to enslave people because of the color of their skin. So it's confusing. So there was this great article in the Federalist that I want to read to you. I'm not sure how long it's going to take me to read it to you. It's not terribly long, but I want to take time because it is so well written. It's beautifully written, and it helps clarify what's happening here. It's written by David Marcus, and the title is Conservative Cowards Are to Blame for Falling Statues. There's no need to name names. The so-called conservatives who have been coddling mindless calls to destroy public art know who they are. And so do the rest of us. These are the reasonable conservatives, the good ones. So ever careful not to be called. These are the reasonable conservatives, the good ones. So ever careful not to be called racist. They had a compromise in mind because they always do. Throw the Confederate statues under the bus, and we can save the rest. Well. Friday night, a statue of Ulysses S. Grant was toppled. Also, the statue of a Catholic saint. Do you know who is to blame? It is not the hordes of progressives with ropes and chains. It is every conservative who thought that those Jacobin lunatics, that's a reference to the French Revolution, those Jacobin lunatics could be appeased by just tearing down certain statues. It is a metaphor for the fecklessness of an American right too cowed to stand up for itself. I get it. You see, these conservatives don't want to be called names. I mean, nobody enjoys that. But here's the thing. After you write your little op-ed about how, of course, the evil Confederate statues have come down, they'll still think you're a racist. They just think you're a spineless one. George Orwell wrote a book once called 1984. Let me know if this sounds familiar. Quote from the book. Every record has been destroyed or falsified. Every book rewritten. Every picture has been repainted. Every statue and street building has been renamed. Every date has been altered. And the process is continuing day by day and minute by minute. History has stopped. Nothing exists except an endless present in which the party is always right. That's a quote from George Orwell's 1984. David Marcus goes on, almost everyone who reads 1984 makes the same fundamental mistake. They think that they are Winston, the protagonist who senses the evil around him. It never occurs to most people that they are far more likely to be almost everyone else in the book. And the shallow conservatives who thought by damning Robert E. Lee they could save Thomas Jefferson are doing little more than suggesting that maybe 2 + 2 = 4.5 or something. As the little fascist leftists like to say, we see you. We see the retweets from writers at Vox. We see the protestations that you are, quote, one of the good ones, end quote. And what are the wages of these sad genuflections? What did you get out of the deal? Are they going to come support you now that the founding fathers are up against the wall? Nope. They will throw you right up against the wall with them as you insist how reasonable you are. To these fair-weather friends, I have a message. This is your fault, and you were well warned. For years, those of us with the courage to open our eyes knew exactly where this was going. It was never about the Confederacy, or slavery, or racism. It was always about destroying the very concept of America and replacing it with a Marxist utopia. That's who you decided to compromise with. What's done is done, but it is not too late. Now that you have seen the miles the left takes when offered an inch, you are welcome to get back in the fight for freedom. They burned you, made you look like fools. Be angry. Otherwise, your silence is complicity with mobs that would destroy not just statues, but the very foundations of our liberty. In some sense, the story of the Confederate statues and Jefferson, Lincoln, Churchill, and Gandhi are stories of forgiveness. We protect their memories because we understand that history's judgment will eventually condemn us for the luxuries we enjoy off the backs of foreign workers in slave-like conditions. We, too, hope to be understood, forgiven. In that spirit, I forgive all of those who failed to answer the call as the statues started falling, but we need you back. As is so often the case, the Great Compromise has failed. There really are only two sides, one that seeks to burn everything down and one that seeks to save the greatest nation the world has ever known. Pick one, now. David Marcus is the Federalist New York correspondent, and we'll put that article on our Facebook page. I think it's so powerful, and I wanted you to hear that, and I'd love for you to read it again and share it. And that reminds me of I wasn't going to talk about this one yet, but I'm going to, because it really is kind of the same thing but different. Chick-fil-A has been a refreshing bastion for many of us because it's represented conservative values. They play Christian music. They've closed on Sundays. They reflected Christian principles, but somewhere or the other, Chick-fil-A has started to go off the rails. Maybe they're all already off the rails. Remember back, a couple of years ago, maybe it's just last year. Gosh, the time goes so fast, that they decided to sort of start giving to other groups besides Christian organizations. In fact, they withdrew funding from high-profile Christian organizations, and we learned that the man in charge of their donations was a Barack Obama operative. I think he's still in place and nothing has really changed. But Dan Cathy, of course, went around and told lots of people that there's some mistake. It really wasn't that. I forgot what his reason was, but he convinced a lot of people that he didn't really mean it, but they're still doing it. So Dan Cathy was in a service with Pastor Louis Giglio, and I think this is Atlanta, right? Christian Lecrae. I don't know Christian, but he's black. He looks like Dennis Rodman to me, actually. But anyway, I thought it was Dennis Rodman initially, and they're sitting on the stage, and Dan Cathy is having a conversation with Pastor Louis Giglio and Christian Lecrae, who looks like Dennis Rodman. And this is what he had to say. This is clip 7.
Some of our closing moments here, but a story that was shared with me by a dear friend who shared with me about a revival that was taking place at a church in Texas. And at that revival, on the front seat was an older African-American man that was sitting there. And this young man got up that was there in that service, and he'd been so gripped with conviction about the racism that was in that local community in a small town in Texas that he took a shoe brush. And he walked over to this elderly gentleman, and he knelt on his knees and began to shine his shoes. And tears began to flow in that service. It was an attitude of conviction. So I invite folks just to put some words to action here. And if we need to find somebody that needs to have their shoe shine, we need to just go right on over and shine their shoes. And whether they got tennis shoes on or not, maybe they got sandals on, it really doesn't matter. But there's a time in which we need to have, you know, some personal action here. Maybe we need to give them a hug, too, brother.
And some stock in Chick-fil-A.
But I bought about 1,500 of these, and I gave them to all our Chick-fil-A operators and staff a number of years ago. And so any expressions of a contrite heart, of a sense of humility, a sense of shame, a sense of embarrassment, begin with an apologetic heart. I think that's...
Oh, he says a lot more. Let me just read you the words. We as Caucasians, until we're willing to just pick up the baton and fight for our Black African-American brothers and sisters, which they are as one human race, we're shameful. Our silence is so huge at this time. And by the way, that's what the left says. Silence is violence. We cannot be silent. Somebody has to fight, and God has blessed our city, but it's shameful how we let things get so out of whack. Then, of course, what he was doing there was crossed over to Lecrae and began to polish his shoes. And that's when Lecrae laughs and says, well, you could do that or give me some stock in Chick-fil-A. And then he said, any expressions of contrite heart or a sense of humility, a sense of shame, a sense of embarrassment, an apologetic heart, I think that's what our world needs to hear today. So here's the thing. This is very complex because we are called as Christians to be humble and to repent. There's no question about it. And I've been trying to think through this. Why is this so off base? Is it off base? I think it's off base. I think Lecrae knew it was off base. That's why he joked. Well, just give me some shares in Chick-fil-A instead of polishing my shoes. Lecrae is a young Black man who, you know, was not enslaved and probably has a good job, I'm guessing. He is not his ancestors, and Dan Cathy is not his ancestors. And I think, what would Jesus think about this? And I think about the woman caught in adultery, and when Jesus said to the crowd, he who is without sin cast the first stone, and then they backed away, and he pulls her up to her feet and says, you know, where are your condemners? And she said, well, nobody has condemned me. And said, then neither do I. And he says, go and sin no more. Now, I was wondering why Jesus didn't say to her, you need to be ashamed. You need to be ashamed. You need to wash the feet of every righteous woman in the neighborhood who's done it right and who you've mocked in the past. You need to hold your head in shame. That would be the best thing for our community. You need to repent, but I mean like bear it in shame. That is just not what Christian doctrine is. You know, if there is racism in your heart as a white or a Black person or a brown person to Black people or white people, you need to repent of that before God. And you need to then change. Go and sin no more. Stop it. But you do not need to walk around in shame. That is just the opposite of the message of Christ. And so we have right now a confusion among our own people, and it's time to really examine the heart of what God means about our behavior. I believe he means that we repent and then we go and sin no more. And I do not believe that we need to walk around with our shoulders bent, that we had relatives, maybe somewhere we had relatives. A lot of Black people in America, their relatives had Black slaves. So, you know, it is not rational, and it is certainly not what Jesus taught. Sandy Rios in the Morning, AFR Talk.